All right, guys, welcome back to the next episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. Today we have special guest Richard Foster of Strom Nutrition. He's going to answer our ubiquinol and coenzyme Q10 question from last week. Plus, we've got some listener questions, D-ball, outside end dosing. We've got a Dear Davey and a whole bunch more, so stay tuned.
Drugs and Stuff is for informational, educational purposes only.
Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. This program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES for additional savings. And today we have with us special guest Richard Foster. Richard, what's your company name?
My name is Richard Foster. I'm from Strom Sports Nutrition. I've competed in strongman and bodybuilding at a fairly mediocre level. And we currently sell products to about 13 different countries, except the US, because the US is a bit of a pain.
I've heard that.
Or two. Yeah. If you want to get stuff made in America and sell it there, it's pretty simple. But if you want to make stuff out of the US and import it, it's a little more tricky. But that's me. And we've worked with Dave on a few products, and our products are primarily aimed at assisted bodybuilders. Well, that's how it started. Although now we focus mostly on health products. That's me.
I got it. My second question for you. You said, what about where Dave lives? You said it's unique. It's different than the rest of the UK. How's that?
Yeah, I suppose it's like Texas is to the US.
Oh, okay.
You know, a little bit backward, but kind of nice in its own right.
I have another question for you. Maybe you can interpret this text I got from Dave.
Probably not.
He said, where is it at? He said, Richard, okay, where are we? He said, I had to nip out. I'll see if Richard's available. What does nip out mean? Because I looked at that and I was like, I don't know what this means.
When you've got to pop out.
Oh, nip out, okay.
Yeah, like, be back in a tick kind of thing.
I didn't know that, Dave.
See, if you nip, something is nippy, then it's quick. So I just run a quick errand. That's all it is.
Oh, okay, nip out. I remember that.
Just you, yes. America. You Americans don't speak properly. I just can't. You know, I'm sorry. I have this problem every week. I have to translate half of the podcast for him because he doesn't understand.
I mean, Dave's accent can be quite tricky.
Whoa, hang on a minute. You now live in Wales, you backward bastard.
I don't. I live in Shropshire, which is about as middle England as you
don't
can get.
Don't go Shropshire. You live where is it now? That backward town.
It's nice where I live. They speak proper English.
Right. Where your house is nice. Where your business is a shithole.
It's a matter of opinion. I choose to disagree. Nicer than where I used to live.
Well, we're grateful to have our guest on today because last week we had a question on coenzyme Q10, and it was something that Dave and I, we haven't used this supplement. It's something that neither of us have done a lot of research on, and so Dave said, you know what, we're going to bring in a specialist here, and that's where you come in, brother. So
what was the question specifically?
So I couldn't find anyone decent, so I just thought, yeah.
That's kind of how I normally end up doing most of my talks.
It wasn't a very specific question, if I recall. I think that maybe it was just about like the efficacy of the supplement, if it is beneficial. What are your thoughts in general on it?
I think if you, like with a lot of supplements, it's very easy for people to discount supplements. If you look at the data and the studies, it would be impossible for anyone to say that it's not efficacious. There are different grades, different qualities of it, and it basically has to do with its state of oxidization or not. Some people will talk about ubiquinol, which is a patented form, which is very, very bioavailable. What a lot of people don't realize is that normal CQ10, just the Bolgo standard one that you get, contains a percentage of ubiquinol by weight anyway. So you can just take a higher dosage of that, which costs much, much less than the patented version. Really, really good data on long-term prevention of heart disease. There's some blood pressure benefit. If someone is on statins, I would definitely recommend that they look at taking some because the use of statins will lower serum blood levels of CQ10. I think it's a really, really good, possibly fairly underrated supplement for long-term heart health, treatment of heart failure, various other bits and pieces. It's not used clinically, but lots of things aren't used clinically that we know are effective. And it's one of the things we have in the UK supplement industry at the moment that's becoming more and more of a problem. Like, there's a question mark over Tudka at the moment as to whether that is allowed to be sold as a supplement. And the issue with that is that it works.
Yeah.
So it's shown an effect which could be regarded as clinical in its efficacy. Therefore, maybe we should make that a medicine. So the UK supplement industry is a little bit funny, but there are lots and lots of things that aren't used clinically that are effective. Yeah, I like it. It's not massively expensive. We use it in support match, which is our on-cycle support product, and there's very little to no issues around it, apart from possibly in people using warfarin. They should consult their doctor or physician because it can interact with warfarin.
Okay.
You've had a couple of supplements you've released recently that seem to have had a very dramatic impact on their users, have you not?
Yeah, and that's where it gets really difficult, because when you start to have things where consumers are talking about them having medicine-like effects, you start to make people like the MRHA very jittery. So we do a product called Systol Max, and we can't say on the tub what it's for. We just have to talk about it being to support healthy blood flow. But it's effectively for blood pressure. I've had issues around blood pressure for the last couple of years because I'm a stress head. And I didn't want to take Ramipril because of its effect on kidneys, potentially. So we produced a product for blood pressure. And we've seen people consistently, guys in the 160 over 100, 120s, dropping to 130 over 80 in 7 to 10 days.
Wow.
Consistently across the board.
Wow.
Which is more than you would expect from medication.
Yeah.
But we're not allowed to talk about what the products are for. All we can do is put up customer testimonials.
Is this something that you can't send this at all to the US is what you're saying at this time, that, or you just can't? How does that work? Could I order it possibly, or how does
for people like yourself, we can do it. Basically what we say is, I'm happy to ship them to you. If you don't get them, it's really not my fault, unfortunately.
Okay, I see.
Although, in terms of getting stuff to the US for private orders, we've never really had an issue. It tends to get there occasionally. It'll take like 6 weeks.
Okay.
Another time it'll be there in a week. The issue we've had is actually trying to ship it on a wholesale level into a distributor in the US. Things have to go through FDA approval and so on and so forth. And it seems that the easiest way of doing that is just to get things manufactured in the States.
I see. That makes sense.
I don't understand the legalities of it all. It's interesting because the US is pretty lax on what they allow you to use as supplements, but quite tight on what you can import as a supplement.
I think that's more down to do with protecting US industry than it is anything to do with safeguarding users against dodgy supplements, to be quite honest.
Yeah,
that would tie in with what I've been told by the manufacturers in the States.
Yeah.
Because you brought a joint support out as well that's done very well, hasn't it?
Well, it's
sold out. No, because I've not been able to get hold of any.
No. We've done a blood pressure supplement and a blood pressure product and a joint support product, both of which have been really, really, really effective. The joint support product sold out incredibly quickly.
I'm still waiting for mine.
You know what? It comes tomorrow, so you'll have it by the end of the week.
I'm on holiday then. Fucking good, isn't it?
When do you go?
Friday morning. So you have to deliver it to Nuki, won't you, personally?
I'll get it to you Thursday.
Oh, my God, this guy. You see what I have to deal with every week.
I don't know how you cope, to be honest. Have you ever got stuck on the phone to him?
Just here on Skype, every week.
Right.
What do you mean, stuck on the phone to me?
You're a very engaging conversationalist, Dave.
It's because I've got no mates. I've got nobody to talk to. So when I get a chance, I have to let rip.
You know, my friends have started to call me, or a few of my friends have started to call me Shit Crossland.
Why?
Because I've started to do a few talks at the hospitals and a few bits and pieces like that. So I'm now referred to as a shit wannabe Dave Crossland.
Oh, wow.
That's harsh.
Yeah. It is, isn't it?
What kind of talks are
That's
you giving?
Very insulting.
Sorry?
What kind of talks are you giving?
Nothing on the level that Dave's doing, but I've done a few bits at a couple of hospitals now about the attitude or the roadblocks that clinicians might have in dealing with users in terms of users quite often feeling that they don't want to speak to the doctor or they can't speak to the doctor because the doctor either won't understand or will just judge them and blame everything that they have on steroids.
Okay.
Medical prejudice is high. I think it's high in the US. It's high over here as well.
Yeah.
It's an ongoing problem. There are steps to try and a little bit more about user profiles and user approaches to usage and drivers for usage and why people use, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But unfortunately, the education is voluntary. So at the moment, it would only be a doctor that would be seeking that information that would engage with it. And obviously, they're not the people that we're having problems with. The people we're having problems with are those that don't want to engage.
Yeah. And then talking a little bit about what happens in the real world in terms of what real world use kind of looks like in average users in the gym, because they seem to be pretty clueless on the most part. Not all of them. There's a few that I've come across that have been very, very good. But it's the same as the case with everybody. At, you know, whether you deal with the police or the armed forces or medical services, there will always be some people who are well informed, but they are unfortunately the minority in a lot of cases.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's the same way here. Well, you know, back on supplements, being that this is a business that, you know, you're in, you spend a lot of time, you know, thinking about what's going to benefit people and, you know, how you can help. For our audience, you know, a lot of the guys that are listening, the show is called Drugs and Stuff. So there are a lot of steroid users here. As far as, say, protective, preventative type health supplements, what would be, say, the top two or three things that you would suggest somebody looked into?
I mean, it's always difficult because it would depend on what someone's doing and what their issues are. For me, if I go on cycle, I know that I need to manage my blood pressure and I need to... that's the main thing that I have issues around.
Okay. But
someone else might not have that problem at all. And because you're dealing with an international audience, there's no point recommending specific products that might cover lots of bases. Although we do one that is very comprehensive. It's not always going to be readily available. NaCl-cysteine, so N-acetyl-cysteine, or glutathione. So if you can get hold of a good quality liposomal glutathione, then use that.
Yeah.
If you can't, NaCl-cysteine is a precursor, it's part of the cysteine cycle. So NaCl-cysteine combines with methionine, which is an essential amino acid, and that produces glutathione. Glutathione is kind of your master antioxidant. It's responsible for removing a lot of waste from the body. It's very supportive of kidney function, liver function. It does lots and lots of things in the body. If you glutathione, supplementary glutathione is going to be your best option if you can get it, but it needs to be a liposomal or possibly an injectable because bioavailability of standard glutathione is terrible.
Yeah.
If you can't get that, NaCl-cysteine is your second best option in terms of liver, kidney health.
Okay.
Give you an idea of how good it is. It's used as a preventive measure through chemo.
Yeah.
So chemo patients very often will get dosed with glutathione to sort of offset the damage that chemo does to healthy cells.
Yeah. And an interesting statistic, just 500 milligrams of paracetamol will deplete 50% of your systemic glutathione stocks.
Oh.
So even things like paracetamol can catastrophically deplete it. One of the first signs that you've got kind of a glutathione deficiency can be kind of bags around your eyes. I have those permanently because I got laser eye surgery last year and I got blocked tear ducts.
So oh, no kidding.
In most people. Yeah, it's crap. I can't cry now, which makes me look super manly.
As opposed to when you used to cry all the time.
All the time. Particularly if I use Clomid, then literally anything is better.
Right.
So NaCl-cysteine or glutathione, a high quality curcumin, anti-inflammatory, free radical damage, joint health. Again, it's one of these ones that gets anti-cancer thrown around a lot. I still sit on the fence with anything that says that because just because of the inherent implications with suggesting something that might be cancer preventative. But it's certainly got a whole host of benefits. And then assuming that the normal bases are covered in terms of like vitamin D3 and fish oils and all that kind of stuff, probably citrus bergamot, actually. We use that in the product that we do, and we've seen consistently, and that was actually one Dave put me onto. We've seen consistently very, very good results in terms of improving lipid profiles with people
really
that use citrus bergamot.
I think that so two areas that people neglect mostly within cycle support or cycle management is BP and lipids.
Sure.
And lipids.
Yeah. Sure.
They're the two that we ignore.
You don't see and you don't feel until it's too late.
Yeah.
They're symptom free effectively. So as a result, or right, apart from very high blood pressure, but as a result, people tend to ignore them. Every set of bloods I look at, the lipids are abhorrent. They're fucking awful. Every single time.
I think the worst I've seen is 10 and 1. I'm sure Dave's probably seen worse. He sees a lot.
I've seen similar. Well, it was lower than 1. It was 0.2 and 10, but it was that sort of scale.
I think we are talking about the same set.
You possibly the same person, yes, but we'll discuss that later.
But yeah, they're both things that it's very easy to ignore because it's not going to affect you now. It's going to affect you when you're a day.
How would you dose that?
Citrus bergamot?
Yeah.
500 to 1,000 milligrams. If I was specifically looking at lipids, I would also combine it with 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C and 5 grams of lysine. Twice daily. That's something called Powling therapy.
Okay.
And I've used that in 3 or 4 clients to incredibly good effect. I've got one client in particular who's a good friend of mine, and even without using anything, his lipids were terrible. And he's now got literally picture perfect lipid profile.
Nice.
From just those two things. So the citrus bergamot and then the vitamin C and lysine. So yeah, 500 to 1,000 milligrams of citrus bergamot. There is a patented version, I believe, that's marketed as being superior. I haven't seen data between the two to know how significant the difference is.
Yeah.
And then the vitamin C and lysine, if it is specifically lipids that someone's got thrown out. But as Dave says, they're both very easy things to ignore. Blood pressure particularly, and I've been guilty of this myself. Dave told me off actually about 3 months ago. There is no excuse to ignore it because it is easily managed.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And easy to ignore.
Even if the management of it is that you need to drop a little bit of body weight or you need to do a bit more cardio. But even things like making sure you're well hydrated, basic supplementation, there's lots of things you can do to get that back in range. But you can also ignore it for 5 years, end up with fucked kidneys.
Sure.
And that's not going to be a very pleasant place to be.
Okay.
Well, the problem with fucked kidneys is they never get better.
Yeah.
You know, once you cross that bridge, then you've got to accept that you will come to the point of kidney failure.
A lot of people like to talk about liver, and I haven't personally seen anybody that I know of that's had real acute problems with their liver. I've seen people with very deranged liver values. You've seen one?
I've seen one in 15 years.
Given the amount of people you see. No, that's not saying for a second that you shouldn't pay attention to your liver, and if you've got deranged liver values, people tend to start to feel very ill. And their performance will suck, and you could even argue that their drug metabolization will be compromised, but they will generally recover if they stop being dickheads.
No, kidneys is the one that for years we dismissed as doesn't happen, and that's the one that's cropping up more and more and
more. Do
you
think the reason it's cropping up more and more and more is the trend towards higher doses?
I've said this quite a few times. We're starting to now see the effects of the trends of the last 5 to 8 years, and we will continue to see an increase in health issues in people over the next 5 years. As
it's not unusual now to speak to people that have been on trend for a year, 2 years.
Oh, thank God.
And it's not unusual now for someone to have kidney issues. I probably get a kidney problem once a fortnight. Some are just acute kidney injuries where it's the immediate effect of the drugs and removal of the drugs and a little bit of care, and kidney function returns to quite a reasonable range. And some are the start of that long downward slope. Because once you start with kidney disease, it doesn't get better. It just gets worse. 5, 10, 15, 20 years, but at some point you will face dialysis and kidney. It's yeah. just then yeah, a case of how long can you hold it off?
Yeah. So those are the things I would probably suggest most people will benefit from if they're using. But it really needs to be tailored to the person, you know? Yeah. I mean, you may well have, I've always been really lucky and my blood glucose management has been really good. I know a lot of people struggle with that. And that's something that you might manage through supplementation if it's appropriate for that person. It just depends.
Okay. What do you like to watch blood sugar? I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind would be like berberine. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Berberine HCL. In fact, I mean, Dave has many, many YouTube trolls. I am quite new to the world of YouTube trolls.
Okay.
I put in a video, we do a glucose disposal aid that combines cinnamon, berberine HCL at 1,000 milligrams, ALA, chromium picclinate, and bitumen extract. And I said in the video, metformin and berberine HCL have both been compared clinically and have very, very similar effects, with the benefit in terms of berberine having a slightly positive effect on lipids.
Mm.
And someone commented on the video and said that's absolutely outrageous to suggest and misleading. Mm. There are three studies on it, and one of them absolutely categorically states, it was double-blind placebo-controlled published medical study, that berberine HCL has been shown to be superior to metformin.
I think from a bodybuilding point of view, it is because you don't get the disruption with glucose as you do with metformin.
Or the down-regulation of IGF-1.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, berberine HCL, I really don't think you can beat it. JP has just brought out a product, Jordan Peters, for American audiences, which combines berberine with something called bentaformin. It's not something I'm familiar with. I know Dean said that the data is very interesting, so I need to look at that myself. But if Dean says it's good, there's probably a compelling reason why.
Cool. I'm planning on talking to him again soon, so I'll have to see what he says. 1,000 milligrams of berberine, so that's a pretty hefty dose. Is that a one time a day type dosage then?
I generally recommend that spread out throughout the day.
Okay.
So if you could take, so our product contains 200 milligrams per cap, so 1,000 milligrams in 5 capsules.
Okay.
If you spread that out throughout the day, 1,000 milligrams, there's been a couple of good studies on 1,000 milligrams a day over a long period, leading to an improvement in body composition.
Nice.
I know some of the very large bodybuilders will use kind of 2,000 milligrams a day. They'll use 10 capsules of our product a day.
Wow.
Some people can't tolerate it digestively.
Digestively, they don't?
Yeah, very similar to metformin, actually. They'll get a very funny tummy quite quickly. Berberine does have a slight antimicrobial effect, so that could explain it. Mm. Generally speaking, I always advise people to start low and build their tolerance.
Yeah.
Set the tolerances that go. But there are a couple of people that I've known who have never been able to get on with it. And in that case, cinnamon bark extract, alpha lipoic acid, they've both got reasonable data on.
Mm. Plus two, you know, I mean, the less you can take of something, the better. But I definitely think I've seen benefit, although the side effect I'll get from berberine is too much of it and I go flat and I can't, just like metformin, I can't get a pump then, you know. Yeah. But for me, 500, that's a good place to be. So I like that idea that you can split that up. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was always the idea. But yeah, I mean, if you're going flat, eat more carbs.
Yeah. Yeah.
More is better.
Yes. Yeah. Dave, you have any other questions here?
No, I mean, no. I just think Richard should push his product range because, to be quite honest, I think it's one of the best out there.
Yeah? Yeah.
I'm not sponsored by anybody. I don't get kickbacks from anybody. I've never put behind anything unless I 100% believe in it.
Hmm.
And he's the only company I've ever come across where there's never been a product produced that isn't of a very high standard and of good value for money and doesn't do what it says on the tin.
Hmm.
Some of the more recent products. Pardon?
We just wanted to make stuff that we wanted to use ourselves.
Yeah, but I mean, some of the feedback you've got off some of the recent products, like the joint support product.
I've had two customers ring up in tears from the joint support product.
Really?
One of whom has said that they're no longer using an assistance chair. And another person saying that they genuinely thought that they were, like, they were done with the gym. They were waking up every night in pain in their hips.
Wow.
They were struggling just to walk to the car. And they're now, literally within 2 weeks, they're back squatting and deadlifting.
Wow.
It's a very, very effective product. I don't like to plug my own shit because it always feels a little bit contrived. And other people do it for me. I know that sounds awful, but people talk, you know? And it is worth noting, actually, because Dave's name is on the front of Support Max, which is our on-cycle support product. We have now probably got 500 sets of blood work of my customers, because we do a blood work service at my shop, from people who have used it, where you've seen a dramatic increase or improvement in blood work.
That's awesome.
With it and without it. So we've got, you know, good quantitative data on the product, which is nice. Dave, I went to Dave when I first wanted to do an on-cycle support product, and I said, look, I've got kind of a formula. Can you have a look at it? And Dave made some suggestions and some changes. And he also wanted some assurances of the quality of the products. And then he was kind of happy to sign off on it, which was hugely important for me because, you know, I'm fucking no one.
You Dave, were. I think you've got a strong reputation now for what you do.
Well, yeah, I think, yeah.
And it's an earned reputation. It's not come from bullshit marketing or sponsoring this athlete or sponsoring that athlete. It's gone from product review, from customer review, because what you put out there is quality. There's no other way about it. It's value for money and it's quality. It's priced fairly and it does what it says it does.
Nice.
Yeah, well, at the time, I mean, even now, like, Dave is still very well regarded within the UK scene.
depends on his meeting.
He is occasionally controversial, but he is well regarded. So having someone who was respected sign off, it was really important to us. But the question just come up from time to time, how much do you pay Dave? And we don't. He wouldn't let me. You know, like, absolute transparency.
Yeah, we need to discuss that again, I think, seeing how much shit's in
that. I've got Ben Chow's Harley to buy, I think. So, but yeah, you know, if Dave wants a product, then we try and sort him out, although he insists on paying for those as well. So that's nice. From, you know, genuinely, it's a true endorsement. It's not they've given us 500 quid, so yeah, that stuff's all right.
Yeah,
there is a lot of that in the industry, you know?
Yeah, sure. I know
athletes who are very well regarded, who are good people, and, you know, people will just do what people do, who get paid by supplement companies to endorse them and use that money to buy products from other companies.
Sure, sure.
You know, that's not uncommon at all.
No, I could imagine it.
I got offered a deal not that long ago, because I spoke to Richard about it. I write blood reports for a company, and they wanted me to start, when I wrote the report, recommend supplements from a certain company.
Okay.
And he was like, no, I won't do the reports anymore. I said to them, it's your business model. If you want to go that way, I understand that. But I will not put on blood reports, take this supplement from this company, take that supplement. I don't mind putting on a blood report, take this type of supplement, but I'm not going to market a company. Because leads to one thing, it leads to a conflict of interest.
You've got to be honest with consumers. And like, our range is designed, as Dave said, around being good value and effective. I work quite a lot with the guys with supplement needs. They're really good guys. They sell a lot of our product. We sell a lot of their product. We're companies that traditionally could have been regarded as rival companies, but I would say that we're actually friends.
I like that. That's cool.
And we all benefit. I sell a lot of their stuff. They sell a lot of our stuff. Their range is much more specific. So we do an on-cycle support product. It's £40, and it covers 95% of users for their on-cycle support needs. Supplement needs have a slightly different approach. They do a heart stack, a liver stack, a kidney stack. They do a liposomal glutathione, which is very, very good. Dave's had good results with that. They do a liposomal curcumin. They do a sleep stack. They are more expensive. You know, you're probably looking at maybe £150 if you needed to use all of those products.
Yeah.
But if you want the absolute best, or more likely, if you've got a specific problem with your liver enzymes or a specific problem with kidney enzymes or whatever, or you've got a history of heart problems in the family, you can use the specific product from their stack for the specific thing you're trying to target. I think it's important to be open with consumers. You know, a lot of companies will maybe poo-poo anything that's not their own. But that wouldn't be fair or giving credit to other people that are out there doing good products.
Yeah, I like your attitude. That's pretty cool.
Shittest
supplement there is.
Yeah, not as in a product or brand, just as in a generalized supplement.
Anything that says it's a test booster. No, that's probably not fair. There are shittest supplements. CLA, raspberry ketones. They'll do absolutely fuck all for you.
Well, why did you sell me all those tubs of it?
Well, looking a bit porky. arginine AKG. You still see that in products, even though it's been proven to reduce endurance and it doesn't do anything else useful. I mean, if you can get IV arginine, that's really good. The problem with arginine is it gets destroyed in the stomach. Which is why we take citrulline converts to arginine, converts to nitric oxide. But oral arginine and supplements, there's so much garbage on the market. It's hard to say one product, but anything in those categories is generally going to be
So what about, you see a lot now with supplements where it's trademarked.
Patented ingredients.
Yes, so patented ingredients.
So it's a really difficult one, and it's at the moment, it's kind of the cool thing to do is to have all of your ingredients. I saw a pre-workout the other day with 9 patented ingredients.
Oh my gosh.
There are some ingredients where the patented version offers a clear, proven benefits. So KSM-66 versus traditional ashwagandha root.
Yeah.
It's standardized. It's extracted via a proprietary extraction process. They use milk somehow. And the efficacy is different from standard ashwagandha, and that's been demonstrated in trials. So the patented version offers a clear benefit. If you've got patented citrulline or a patented amino acid or anything like that, the patent does guarantee you that it is what it says it is. It comes through an approved supply chain. You know it is definitely what it says it is. However, if you buy citrulline from China and you get it HPCL tested and it comes up at 99% pure, then it's pure citrulline anyway. Same thing.
Yeah.
So I think it's misleading, as some people do suggest, that if it's patented, it's better. That's not always the case. There are some occasions where the patented versions are better. Soteria glutathione, KSM-66, Creapure. The patented glycerols, because they've got a better standardization of glycerol to filler. Things like Hydromax, for example. So there are lots of good patented ingredients, but there's also a lot of stuff where it's just adding unnecessary cost to the consumer. So I think the advice to anyone listening would be to look at the patented version and see if it offers any benefits over just a pure version of whatever the standard ingredient would be. And as long as you trust your supplier, you trust your manufacturer to be using good products, it really shouldn't make any difference. I don't know if you're getting the same thing in the States.
I've seen one product, and I don't want to say where it came from, but I remember somebody said there was an issue with it, that it was a carb product, and that the main carbohydrate in it was patented, and it doesn't say exactly what that is, but we were kind of made to believe it was going to be like a highly branded cyclic dextrin type thing. And then
did
you
come in a silver tub?
I can't say what it was, but it it did end up having a lot of dextrose in it, basically, from what I understand.
That's true as well. Even if it's an ingredient, you're still relying on the manufacturer and the supply chain not fucking you over at some point. Which is sometimes, I think, so you can get ingredients tested in the UK. Sometimes just getting stuff locally tested.
You can? You mean like you can send something out? Is that costly to do, though?
Like £150, £200 an ingredient. It's not.
That's not too bad.
It's If you sent them a bag of powder and said, tell me what this is, that could be quite a bit more expensive.
Yeah.
But if you're saying, look, this is citrulline,
right?
All they do effectively is check its molecular weight against a chart of or a database of this is what its molecular weight should be, this is what it is, there's this degree of variance in it, so it's this percentage pure.
Hmm.
So that's a relatively simple.
I know you have to go pretty soon here, but I do have another question that does tie into this. You know, we've worked with another one of the programs I do, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We have a sponsor over there, Azoth, and they make a nootropic product. And every batch that he does, he sends it out to get third party tested. I mean, that's got to get pretty expensive. Tell me about testing your products once you've had them manufactured.
Yeah, so we don't do third-party batch testing
for
a couple of reasons. One, we get the raws tested.
Okay.
I trust the manufacturer. Two, we are our manufacturer is called ISO 9001 approved and tested. So that's kind of the highest standard of auditing you can get in the UK.
Okay.
As a result, that's kind of my assurance that the products are what they say they are.
Okay.
For those that don't know, ISO 9001. Its main thing is the practice of traceability. So every ingredient, every process, everything that factory uses, from its paper clips to its bog roll, has to come from an approved supplier that also has that audit chain.
Wow.
So you're pretty safe. If any product is stamped as ISO 9001, you can be pretty certain that it is what it says it is, because if it's not, those guys get fucked royally.
Okay.
But yeah, so full third-party batch testing on a complete product is genuinely very expensive. So fair play to the guy doing that. I think at the moment, certainly for myself, we're a relatively small company still, or I suppose I've been told I have to say I'm medium-sized now.
Okay.
that cost inevitably will have to be passed on to the consumer.
Right, right.
You know, if you're dealing with runs of 1,000, and you're going to have to pay kind of $2,000 to get a product third-party batch tested.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at a couple of quid per tub per product, and I don't believe at the moment that it would offer any real perceivable benefit.
Yeah.
Because everything is monitored through that supply chain anyway.
That's cool. I like that. I didn't know about that you guys had that over there, that supply chain. What's that called again?
It's one of the reasons ISO 9001. It's one of the reasons. Quite a few American guys do order from us, and it is a bit of a pain. I know Phil Viz gets stuff from us from time to time because he doesn't necessarily trust the processes that go on in some of the US factories. Now, I have no experience with the US factories, so I don't know at all as to whether that's a valid concern or not, because I have no experience with those guys, but it's what I get told by US consumers.
Okay. Well, if anybody was interested in checking out what you guys do and possibly placing some type of a private order, where would they find your company?
So www.stromsports.com. However, there's basically nothing on it because trading standards don't allow us to say anything about anything we do. So all you'll get is the product and what's in it.
Okay.
Instagram is where we put out most of our content because we're a little bit freer to talk about things anecdotally. And in my opinion, this product will do this and so on and so forth.
Okay.
For private orders as well, you can slip into my DMs on the Instagram or send us a contactless form on the website. And we'll try and arrange it for you. Shipping today, I've sent one today. It was £20.
Okay.
I believe the exchange rate is actually fairly favourable at the moment for you guys. It's just a case of, we send it recorded, but it's Royal Mail. If it doesn't get there, it's a case of I'm really, really sorry, but it's kind of out of our hands. And I think out of probably the last 100 that we sent to the States, I think I've only had 2 that went walkies.
That's a pretty good ratio. I know we take a lot more risks on other things that we order sometimes in the mail. So that sounds good. That sounds like a good risk to take.
What would that be, Scott?
Cakes, things like that, things that might spoil.
Oh, right.
Things that might spoil, you know?
Yeah, oily things are very naughty in America, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's why we don't have any kind of like open talks. Like you said, you go to the hospitals and stuff. We don't have anything like that here. You know, it's still.
We have a harm reduction clinic in my shop every Saturday where you can come along and get your blood work done for users.
Really? Really? Free of charge.
Well, it's not free of charge to me. I pay, but.
Wow. I mean, but I'm saying I'm an average guy that lives by the shop. I could stop in and go. Yeah.
You turn up and say, hello, I'm on cycle. Can I check my liver values?
Wow. That's insane. That is amazing. That's quite a service that you provide.
It's a service that I would have used when I was 18 if it had been available to me and it simply didn't exist. And that's why we do it.
That's pretty badass. That's pretty cool.
We were funded by the NHS when it started kind of 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And the funding got withdrawn. And I just like to keep it going because I do think it's a genuinely useful service. And because we put it through, we still use the NHS lab and we put it through there. We just cover the cost of it. It's really not. Probably for us to do six sets of blood work probably costs the same as it would cost for one individual to get the blood work done. So it's not a massively expensive exercise. And we do only do six people a week.
Okay.
So it is limited. Like, we don't open it up to hundreds and hundreds of people. It's six people a week, first come, first serve.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. Dave, anything else?
No. That's it. I can't promote this man enough. There's one of the few people in life I actually trust.
Shit.
Yeah.
No pressure.
Yeah, a lot of pressure on you now.
Yeah. Still got a shit hairdo, but I mean, apart from that,
I've had it done today.
Yes, I can tell. It looks all fresh.
Yeah,
well, you look very well, actually. You do look very well.
I haven't. It's probably because I'm not on a skin.
Why?
Where's your face gone, Dave?
He's getting all blurry. His daughter must be downloading a YouTube video or something.
Probably.
I might have done something. I don't know. I don't know. This is all very complicated. Oh, dear.
You just took a picture.
Did I?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You're less tech savvy than me, and that's hard.
I'm not less tech savvy. I'm just, yeah, maybe, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Richard, we'll have.
I'm an absolute dinosaur.
we'll put everything up on the next show notes, so that if people want to check out the website, you know, they can go and see it. And what's your Instagram too?
Oh, I think it's Strom, STROM, not Storm. Strom _sports_nutrition.
All right. And if it's if it is not, guys, then I will find out which one it is, and the right one will be in our show notes. So
it's not a stupid name. Strom is Norse for power.
I didn't know what that was.
Old Norse.
It's not a stupid name.
Strom. Strom.
Apparently it also means like big tree in Eastern European.
That's actually big tree supplements, I actually prefer.
Big tree supplements.
But yeah, no, it's been a pleasure. I'm sorry I wasn't more prepared. It's been pretty chaotic.
No, we're happy to have you, man. We're very much appreciated. Thank you very much.
Pleasure to meet you. And yeah, have a nice evening.
You too.
You too, mate. We'll get give it a month or so, and we'll get you back on for a proper full episode.
That'd be perfect. That'd be cool.
And have fun on holiday, Mr. David.
I can't wait.
Don't crash your van.
Two more sleeps.
Don't crash your van.
Oh, don't. I was having nightmares last night that when I pulled it into petrol station to fill it up, I got it stuck under the roof.
That could happen.
I know.
I'll speak to you soon. Cheers, guys.
Take care,
mate.
Thanks for your time.
Bye.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode of Drugs and Stuff. I hope you enjoyed this first segment with Richard Foster of Strom Supplements. Up next, we're going to do some Q&A, but first I want to give a quick plug to our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICESOATS, which will get you 25% off of their oatmeal blends. Now, this is something I haven't tried, so I just placed an order for a bunch of 1 pound bags of a bunch of different flavors, including pancakes and syrup. I gotta see what that tastes like. And I ordered a bunch of extra bags because, well, I'm going to give them away as prizes on the show. So guys, you can possibly win a bag of oatmeal from True Nutrition, or you can make a purchase yourself. You can use our code ADVICESOATS to get 25% off that order. And you can use our code ADVICES for anything else on the site. Guys, before we get back to the show, I want to give a shout out to Dave Crossland. You can check more of Dave out at crosslands.org.uk. He has a monthly subscription at his website. You can also reach out to him there for coaching. Dave has been doing an awesome job putting a lot of weight and muscle onto guys. So definitely, if you want some help in your off season, that's what he specializes in, is getting dudes big. So check out Dave Crossland at crosslands.org.uk. All right, guys, let's get to the Q&A. All right, guys, welcome back to Drugs and Stuff. And all right, we've got a few questions here that were left from last week. So, I can understand where you're at, Dave. He's a cool dude. And I can see why you're friends with him. I'm going to start first with Robert O'Leary here. He says, what recommendations would you guys have for a guy with in-range estrogen but still getting nipple bumps unless on tamoxifen, currently on TRT dosing, 100 milligrams of SIP with 250 HCG twice a week and 0.5 milligrams of Arimidex?
It's the HCG.
The HCG. So even though he's using...
It's the HCG. The reason he's getting... Also check his prolactin levels.
Oh, okay.
But my first protocol would be HCG.
Okay. So just pull that out first.
It aromatizes like a bitch.
Oh, okay.
But I would just pull bloods first and just do a... I mean, he said his estrogen's in range. Has he checked his prolactin?
Okay.
Make sure, we'll see where that is. Because that can creep up over time, even on TRT. So just check his prolactin. However, if his prolactin is elevated, I wouldn't go down the cabergoline route on a TRT dose. I'd look at vitamin B6.
Really? Vitamin B6 instead? How would you dose that?
300 to 600 milligrams a day.
Okay. Skip Hill was just talking about that on one of the other programs. Have you ever had any personal experience using B6?
Not personally. I have with clients. If I've got a client that's got borderline prolactin or just topping prolactin on threshold, I will generally tend to go for vitamin B6 before I go for CABER.
Okay.
And if I've got a client on very low dose or TRT with still showing prolactin levels, I'd go vitamin B6 there. The CABER is just a bit too harsh. And there's other offsets of overusing a dopamine antagonist like CABER as well.
Sure.
So I would, where possible, I would go the vitamin B6 route. Obviously, a high chemically induced prolactin. I mean, I got a set of blood through last week, and their prolactin was 896.
No kidding. What's the range?
Upper range is about 400.
Okay, so double plus.
Massive.
That's crazy.
That's really, I'm saying that the estrogen was 400
Oh my God.
I mean, so, they were insane. They weren't, I didn't get any information about symptoms or anything like that, but you know, something like that, you've no choice. It's cabergoline, you can't do anything else. Dostanex, you're going to have to use that sort of drug. But if your prolactin's bubbling at 450, then I'd probably go Vit B6 first.
Okay.
And see if you can manage it that way rather than go straight into cabergoline. So, but pull bloods, check prolactin. If prolactin's good and there's no issues there, then I'll probably pull HCG.
Oh, we've got a Dear Davey.
Oh, you'll go on then.
Yeah, all right. I'm going to go to that first. He has two questions. He says, Dear Davey, I find it difficult to eat my meals every 2 to 3 hours with a partner that likes to go out to eat. How can we both exist and be happy? I get panicked when we go out, in bulking mode at the moment, and eventually I'll be in prep, and going to eat out won't even be an option.
Why not?
Explain.
I'm going to a restaurant. We're eating out. Okay. I will have steak and new potatoes. Why have I broken my diet?
Okay. Or chicken breast, right? Whatever it is.
Yeah. Hold the sauce. Trim the fat. Restaurants are really accommodating these days. In fact, more so probably than they've ever been. You can special order pretty much any order on the menu now. So, you know, I'll have a chicken breast, skinless, please, and I'll have some winter vegetables.
Can you do that at McDonald's, I wonder?
Well, obviously, shit, you know, at the end of the day. So, but if someone was taking me out for a meal, and taking me to McDonald's, I'd be pissed. You cheap bastard. I'm going to take it out for a meal. You take me fucking decent, you cheap git. I ain't giving out for a McDonald's. There's no chance.
Do you guys have Burger King over there?
Yes, we do.
How about Burger King?
Which is better? Which is better, but models over at Burger King.
Well, I was going to ask you, would you put out for Burger King?
You know, Burger King chips are vile. McDonald's chips are definitely better. It's like fries.
I know what you meant. American. Actually, I translated that. I knew that the wheels were turning in my head, and I was like, chips? No, fries. I know what he means. So
the only thing I used to like about Burger King over McDonald's was that you could order the extra patties.
Oh, you can't do that at McDonald's, huh?
You can now, but you never used to be. Now you can customize your McDonald's burger, but it's limited to how much you can do to it.
Okay.
Whereas Burger King, you could have a 7-patty burger if you wanted.
Oh, my God. Did you ever eat a 7-patty burger?
Oh, just as... I've done a 5.
Did you really? Nice.
I've done a 5. But no, I mean, you know, let's be sensible. You're eating out, you can still be sensible. Sure. You can still work within your macros or your diet plan. It might need a little bit of lateral thinking, and it might need that you leave some of the ingredients on the plate.
Yeah.
You just don't eat certain elements of the meal. But you can still fit within. Now, if a partner's still got a problem at that stage, then I would say they're being a little bit unfair.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going out to a restaurant, you're sitting there with all that nice food around you, and you're managing your diet around that food so you can spend quality time together in a nice social environment, then you shouldn't be falling out with your partner because they're refusing to eat an ice cream.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point. I've seen people who have messed up because they've gone out to eat, and they're like, well, I had to go out to eat. You know, I had a business dinner. So I ate whatever.
Yeah, but that's just an excuse for being weak. I've done it myself, you know. Yeah. I've been on diet. I've gone to a corporate event, and it's been a buffet. And I've thought, I'll just have one. And before I've known it, I've stacked my plate high with shit, and I'm just piling it in my throat. But all that is weakness. No one forced me to do that.
Right.
And I've gone to, Jesus, I mean, when I was proper... like doing the projects, I've gone to conferences and stuff, and I've turned up with my cool box fridge.
Have you really?
And just, you know, sat there and got my tub out and eating it. And, you know, if anyone's got a problem with it, that's their problem, not mine.
Yeah.
As long as I'm polite and I'm discreet, I don't see what the issue is. You wouldn't argue with me if I was diabetic, or you wouldn't argue with me if I had a religious need in regards to the food I ate. So why is it an issue because I choose to train and watch my diet in a certain other way?
You're a nice guy. You're a nice guy, Dave, but I imagine not many people want to argue with a 330-pound guy about anything, you know.
Just there saying. Is that. Yeah, I mean, you know, but it's true. I mean, you know, my physical presence does help me get away with some shit that possibly other people wouldn't.
But you do make a good point, and I do understand what you're saying. Anybody, you know, who is on a fixed situation, they could do it, right? That's what you're telling me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I used to go out to the cinema and stuff, and I'd just get a coffee and sit. What you tend to find is when partners have an issue with it, it's because it underlines that what they're doing, ooh, they know is good for them.
Yeah, I could see that.
So because you don't partake in the guilty pleasure, they're not sharing the guilt of eating shit.
Yeah.
And the guilt solely relies with them, and that's why they get pissy about it. It's got nothing to do with anything else apart from the fact that they don't want to look a fat bastard,
right? Right.
By eating shitloads of crap in front of you, and you're sat there being really good. So that's the main driving factor behind partners complaining that when you go out to eat, you stick to your diet. But you know, you can still be sociable. You can still eat in a nice environment and eat nice food, and just be sensible.
And he's bulking right now. It's not like he, which, you know.
Leeway at the end of the day. I mean, as long as you're not going out eating fucking 5 gallons of ice cream, you've steak meal with potatoes and rice and veg. Even if you had the sauce on it, it's not going to be overly damaging in the big picture of things if the rest of the diet's tight.
Yeah, yeah.
And if that's the mental issue they then have because they feel guilt, then that's an eating disorder. Mm. And you've just got to start to just lighten up a little bit. You know, off season, you need a bit of relaxation with your food.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you eat shit, because you shouldn't. Off season, your diet should still be relatively clean. But you should still be able to go out and still live a normal social life.
Even when I'm dieting, I can go to the diner up at the corner and I can order chicken breast. You know, even if that's all I ate, just chicken breast, I could do that. And if somebody I was with wanted to eat out, then we could go up there and I could do that. You know, I might even be cleaner than what I would have done otherwise, you know.
The last time I dieted properly, there's a local curry kebab place near, well, in the main town. And they do a fish naan.
Really?
And I'd go and my wife would order the curry or the kebab she wanted, and I would get the fish naan. Hmm. And it was just a grill top piece of fish.
Oh, perfect.
In a naan bread with salad.
Perfect.
I felt like I had the biggest cheat going.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It was lovely. Absolutely lovely.
It's nice too, because they'll, you know, it when somebody else is cooking it, you get it from a restaurant, it tastes different than if you're making that chicken or fish at home, right?
Yes, it does. Always. Like other people's chips always taste nicer than yours.
Let's see if I can get his other question here. He says, advanced user here, what would be the upper safe limit of D-ball? Dave, I was just thinking about this the other day. Remember when D-ball used to be made in 5-milligram tablets? Now they're in 50s, you know?
Yeah, no. Safe. The safe's a horrible word. I don't like using that word at all.
Okay.
For the simple reason is technically none of it's safe, really.
Yeah.
But time and duration is obviously a big factor. Current health levels are a big factor. If you're an otherwise incredibly healthy person and you're taking a decent amount of liver support supplementation, I would have said it starts getting naughty when you start getting 80, 100 milligram a day.
Okay, yeah.
And that's a big whack.
That's assuming that you have a healthy liver to begin with, right?
Yeah. And that's a big whack, but I have known people run that and run that relatively symptom free.
Mm-hmm.
But your traditional sort of borderline dose is 40 to 60 milligram. But like I said, you know, I think when you start going over 100 milligrams of any oral, you're starting to push your luck at that point. However good your supplementation is, that's going to start getting toxic. And the biggest impact for most people is just a loss of appetite, because the orals for 90% of people are particularly harsh on their appetite.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
The highest oral dose I've ever done is 200 milligram, which was 100 milligram of oxymephalone and 100 milligram of Lanivar.
Phew. Did that ruin your appetite?
It took the edge off.
Yeah, I bet. I bet it did.
But then I've always been able to force feed. So I for a long period of time, I never had an appetite.
Okay.
Just open, shovel, swallow. That's the highest oral dose I ever gone. But generally speaking, I didn't run huge amounts of orals. Just didn't bother, really.
Okay.
And when I ran that, I actually ended up stopping it because I was running it almost as a pre-workout, and the pumps that I was getting were debilitating to the point where it just was destroying the workout quality.
Mm.
So I ended up dropping it anyway because it was just, the pumps were insane.
Hmm. I am looking down the line here. Chest exercise ideas for a shit shoulder.
It's not so much the exercise, it's more how you perform the exercise.
Yeah.
One of the biggest issues with shoulders coming into play with any chest movement is usually because people drop the sternum.
Okay.
And they allow the shoulders to come forward.
Okay. Yeah. So, oh, yeah.
Got to make sure you keep your chest lifted up and your shoulders pulled back. And if you do that, you'll focus the load on any movement more on the pec and you'll take it off the shoulders.
Sure, sure.
People have a bad habit, especially on pressure movements, that when they get to the point of extension, that they overextend through the shoulder.
Yeah.
So the back of the shoulder comes off the pad and the chest sinks and the arms come forward, when really what you want to be doing at the end of the movement is actually lifting into it with your chest, which will stop your shoulder from lifting, and then fully contract the pec. So I would have said it's more down to exercise execution than it is actual exercise. But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, your shoulder impingement could be many different things, could cause pain and problems in many different movements. So it's just a case of seeing what hurts and what doesn't.
Yeah. 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 I think I found for me with my shoulder when it was bothering me, anything that I had, well, barbell was out first of all, but then I had to be careful with dumbbell sometime. Anytime I had to balance something, it was the balancing would kind of take that extra work, and the shoulder had to get in to do that. So there were certain machines that would work well where I didn't have to, you know, balance anything. I just could get in there and just press, you know, and that seemed to work better for me.
Find plate loaded machines or even stack machines that are pressing movements will generally be a lot more comfortable on a shoulder if you've got a dodgy shoulder, because like you said, there's no stabilizer. So you can just sit in, lift the chest, pull the shoulders back and just move. There's no stabilization whatsoever. Yeah. So the shoulder is not going to get pulled into a workload which it wouldn't normally get pulled into.
Yeah.
Obviously, with a bench press, you've got to take it off the rack. You've got to return it to the rack. There's stabilization issues, same with dumbbells, same with flies. So they will all engage the shoulder to some degree, even if you're super strict with your movement, where a machine will allow you to just focus on just pressing and nothing else. Particularly as well, it's very handy if you've got shoulder problems, is to go suicide grip.
Oh, yeah, yeah, me too. I've found that myself for sure.
You know, if you're not gripping the bar, you're less likely to engage the arm and the shoulder.
Yeah, I've noticed that myself too. Let's see here. Let's see if we have anything else worth. Let's see if we have anything else at all. We did the topic about Yohimbine, I believe. There might have been one more up here. That may have been it, Dave.
I think that might be it.
We've got a good show here. I think we have some more questions somewhere else, but I could save those for another time. We're already about an hour in. I'm getting ready to head out to Canada after we get off the line here. What's your day looking like?
My day's pretty much done. I've just got a message. I need to change somebody's diet. And then tomorrow I'm just finishing off getting ready for going away, really. So nice. Obviously, the military contract's not running at the moment, so workload's quite quiet. So I've only really been just having to deal with clients, which has made life really, really easy. So take the last of the bikes up to the bus tomorrow, to the van, and then fill it up, get it all ready.
All right.
And then just Thursday then do the food shopping for going away, and 7 o'clock Friday morning off we set.
Heck yeah, man, that'll be fun. And everything with the prostate health, how's that coming along now?
I'm 95% symptom free.
Nice, good.
I've still got another 3 weeks to 2.5 weeks to go. They've brought my dose down because the antibiotics were absolutely flooring. I've never had that before, actually, but tired beyond belief.
Yeah.
And I was getting a bit panicked. I was thinking, is this stress my kidney out? You know, have I got a real dip in kidney function?
Oh, yeah.
So I gave bloods on Monday. Okay. Results would have been back within 24 hours. And they basically said, if we don't ring you, there's not a problem. So they haven't rung me, so there's not a problem.
Nice.
So it's just a side effect from the antibiotics. But I would get up, do literally just dragging my ass. It's like, I can't be bothered. So since the dose has come down, I feel a bit more human again. I'm pretty much pain free, and everything's working fairly normally. So I've just got to put up the next 2.5 weeks of feeling a bit groggy and a bit shitty.
Don't fall asleep driving that camper around. That's all I got to say.
Oh, don't worry. I've got my wife there poking me with a big stick. There'll be no chance of that.
Sounds good. It's a good plan.
But I'm looking forward to the break. It's supposed to rain for 2 weeks. It's supposed to just rain constantly.
Oh, man.
Ah, I don't care.
That's like sitting and... That's a famous UK weather. I thought it rained there every day of the year.
It does. It fucking did this morning. I got so wet through. Yeah. It's now blue skies and sunny again. But yeah, it's a bit like a woman at the moment, is the weather. It changes its mind every 5 minutes.
I don't think I'm supposed to laugh at that.
No, you're not. We'll probably get a complaint, but fuck it.
We don't have any female listeners, I don't think.
Do we have any listeners?
Me and you. That's it.
Three listeners. But nah, I'm just looking to get away, mate. I just didn't get enjoy. I need a break. I'm tired. I don't mind admitting it. I am tired.
Well, it'll be good, man. We all need a break from time to time. I'll look forward to getting back with you then when you're back around for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Dave, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it, as always.
Pleasure, as always.
Radio Network.